Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
And we welcome you inside the playbook again for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. We've got an exciting show planned for you here today. Coming up in a little bit, Warren Moon, who, of course, is a Hall of Fame quarterback, and he's a part of the Seattle Seahawks radio broadcast crew on KIRO Radio 710 in Seattle. He's going to join us here in a little bit to go over the Seattle Seahawks and their fortunes and some thoughts on the game coming up this weekend. Also, Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly will join us in the 3 o'clock hour today to get the very latest from practice this afternoon. Of course, the Patriots do welcome in a new member of the defense. More on that in just a couple of moments. Actually, a new member of the defense that's an old member of the defense. I wonder how many of you actually thought that this would happen. If you're just tuning in and you don't know what I'm talking about, hang on for just a second, and I'll get right to it. A lot of news around the NFL today as well, and we do want you to share your emails with us, as always, webradio@patriots.com, webradio@patriots.com. Now, back to the news of the day. Fact is, the Patriots did sign Roosevelt Colvin. Also picked up linebacker Angelo Craig to the practice squad. I can't say that I'm totally surprised. What I will say is what kept him. Now, you know a guy that didn't quite reach what the Patriots thought he had capable of him while he was here, was let go at the end of last year, tried to pick up with the Houston Texans, signed an offseason free agent deal with them, and was let go before the regular season even started. Clearly, he was not and is not the player that he was when the Patriots signed him as a free agent from Chicago. That hip injury that he suffered in Philadelphia a few years back obviously has taken a little bit of the starch out of the shirt, so to speak. Roosevelt has also said, in fact, he said on WEEI in Boston, and you may have even heard him here as well, say that, you know what, I'm happy with my career. I don't necessarily need to go back into football and finish on an uptick or an upbeat or finish playing for a championship, what have you. He's satisfied. You know, he had a good career. He had a good run while it lasted. And he didn't need to continue to hang on football-wise. And you know what? I really admire that. I really appreciate that. To me, I think that that's the sign of someone who is a true professional in every way. So this is why I'm particularly pleased to find that the Patriots have decided, well, you know what, here's a guy that certainly isn't what he was, because if he was what he was, they wouldn't have him right now. Now, would they? He'd probably still be in Houston, or he would have signed with somebody else. But the fact is that he decided to do this because he probably feels like he can still contribute, number one. I really doubt, because he's a very successful businessman as well, I really doubt that he's doing this to come back for the money, just to prolong his career and grab another paycheck. I really don't think Roosevelt Colvin is that way. Based on my knowledge of him and listening to him speak, I know him limitedly, but I can't imagine that he's coming back for the buck here. You know, it's probably a prorated free agent veteran minimum that he's coming back for. So in that respect, he's coming back, number one, because he feels like he can contribute. Why can he contribute? Because he knows the system, of course. He knows how to play for these guys. He knows how to play with these guys. And he knows there's a definitive need. A definitive need. And because of the injury situations and such, he's going to step right in. And apparently it could happen as soon as this weekend in Seattle. See, I kind of thought that once Adalys Thomas went down a few weeks ago, that this was probably on the burner. Don't know if it was the back burner or the front burner, but it was definitely on the burner since that point in time. I also had a sneaking feeling that the Patriots would probably try to contact Victor Hobson again, who, of course, was signed as a free agent in the offseason, signed with them. And like Roosevelt Colvin, when he was released by the Texans, Hobson was cut by the Patriots before the season started. And I understand that Victor Hobson has signed a deal with the Cincinnati Bengals. So maybe that's part of the reason why he did not come back to New England. Maybe the Patriots also felt a little bit more comfortable with Colvin because he at least was a proven commodity while he was here. And Hobson obviously had played last year with the Jets and didn't have quite as much background with the Patriots. But if one wasn't available, maybe the other would have been. It looked like the Patriots had several options. I'm also mildly surprised, kids. I'm mildly surprised here that the Patriots have not contacted Junior Seau. Now, that doesn't mean they haven't. And maybe he just said, thanks, but no thanks, I'm finally done. I guess you'd have to consider that's the case. And maybe Junior decided not to do it simply because he realizes the Patriots are fighting an uphill battle to get to where he wants to go. You know, it's a finite amount of time. Maybe Junior Seau has reached that happy place in his own football mind as well. That, you know what? I'm okay without it. I don't need it anymore. Just the fact that I never won a ring doesn't matter. I'm okay with it. He's still a Hall of Famer. I think we all realize that. That's about as much of a slam dunk as you can get. But I'm mildly surprised that he's not with him. I thought that maybe the desire might still be there. I certainly believe that the interest on the Patriots' behalf is still there. But what I also think it may point to is the fact that the Patriots are just incredibly pleased with Gerard Mayo, I think as we all probably realize, and that between Mayo and Bruschi in the middle, and what they currently have as well, Sales' role is simply going to be, you know, as a backup middle linebacker anyway. Maybe they just decided that would be too much to overcome. Who knows? Just mildly surprised, though, that he wasn't in the mix here. But Victor Hobson, probably considered. Roosevelt Colvin is the new signing. Spent, of course, 5 seasons with the Patriots from 03 through 07. 117 career games, 75 starts overall in 9 total seasons in the league with the Patriots and the Bears. 414 career tackles. He has 52.5 career sacks, 3 picks. He's forced 14 fumbles, 9 fumble recoveries. And by the way, his 52.5 career sacks, as he reactivates himself this weekend, that will rank 5th amongst all active NFL linebackers. So I guess that kind of experience, you really can't undervalue. Sounds pretty good. All right, let's get to the phones. Warren Moon, Hall of Fame quarterback, now part of the broadcast crew for the Seattle Seahawks on Cairo 710 in Seattle. Kind enough to join us inside the playbook today. Warren, it's indeed a pleasure to talk to you, sir. How are you today?
I'm great, John. How are you doing today?
Wonderful, thanks. You won't recall this at all, but when you were a quarterback with the Houston Oilers, I covered Oilers training camp regularly, and we had many opportunities in those gang 'em up interviews with a lot of other guys from the Houston media and San Antonio media in those hot training camps in San Angelo, Texas. How fondly do you look back on those days in San Angelo?
Oh, not at all. You know, we moved our training camp all over Texas trying to find a cooler place to be, whether it was away from the humidity or whatever. We started in West Texas, and then we ended up moving to San Angelo. We moved to, San Antonio for a while. I mean, we were all over the place. So you just couldn't escape the heat. You couldn't escape the humidity of Texas. And I don't look back fondly at those days at all.
Well, I don't blame you. It was pretty hot for us, too. And we didn't have to put on the pads, trust me.
I'll tell you what, I was in some of the best shape of my life during those days, though.
Absolutely.
You work out in that type of heat and humidity, there's no way not to get in shape.
Absolutely. I believe that. Obviously, this game this weekend is a little different for both sides. The Patriots are still trying to hang on, I think, in terms of the playoff chase of the AFC. What are the Seahawks trying to hang on to?
Well, they're just trying to hang on to their pride. You know, this is a very prideful organization. We've won our division the last 5 years. I've been to the playoffs many times. Been to the Super Bowl in the past 3 years. So this is a team that's not used to losing. And Mike Holmgren is not a coach that's used to losing either. And they wanted to kind of send him out, hopefully, on a winning note. He's not going to have a winning season this year, obviously, because of their record at 2-10. But they can at least maybe put together some type of semblance of a winning season by winning these next four ball games to end their season.
How do you feel how this team stacks up because of their injuries in an effort to try to win these next four ball games, as you say?
Well, they're starting to get healthier. You know, Matt Hasselbeck is finally back in the lineup, the quarterback. They're getting some consistent receiver play now. That was one position that was devastated by injuries this year. Their top five receivers went down before the season even got started. So they've really been trying to recoup in a lot of different areas. Their offensive line now is kind of banged up, but you know, they're going to put guys out there. I think they're not as healthy as they've been all year, but they're close to it, and they're still playing hard, and that's the key. As long as you continue to play hard, good things might happen to you.
You know, I realize this is probably a kind of a far-flung question, but since you played for the Seahawks in the late 90s as well, and you set a franchise record for passing yards in one season with them back in, I think it was, 97, how has this organization morphed? Because I was speaking yesterday with a couple of the beat reporters, and they feel like under Mike Holmgren, this organization, this franchise, had elevated itself from basically being considered mediocre in the NFL. Do you find that an accurate assessment?
Mediocre?
Yep.
I don't think that. You know, you look over the past, 5, 6 years, this is the most winning organization in the NFL, besides the Patriots, and I think the Indianapolis Colts. So this is a very good football team. It's a very good organization. This organization has really changed under the leadership of Todd Lewicki, and he's really brought the community involved into the team a lot more than they had ever been before. And that's why, you know, there's such a tough place to play on the road in their stadium at home because of that 12th man crowd, and also because they had a pretty good football team over the past 5 years.
They most definitely have. I certainly have to concur where that's concerned. And yet, they've kind of fallen on hard times, certainly for several reasons. We've already talked a little about the injuries as well. Coach Holmgren has already made it clear that he's going to step aside at the end of this year. How much has that affected the way this team has played this year, in your estimation?
I really don't think it's affected it at all. You know, a lot of people try and talk about the lame duck theory, but, you know, this is not a coach that is going to be gone because he's been losing and because he hasn't had success like most lame duck coaches are. It's because he's decided to retire, and I think the players have tremendous respect for him as a coach because of the success that they've had under him, and they really wanted to come into this season and have a great year for him, but the devastation of injuries, as you know, in this league is so even that when you have as many injuries as this team had, it was very hard to come back from that, and that's been the biggest problem. And even if you have a coach that you consider a lame duck coach, the coach in waiting is Jim Mora Jr., who is on this staff. So if you're a player that's saying, hey, I'm not going to play hard for this guy because he's not going to be here next year, well, the guy that is going to be here next year is on the staff, so you're being evaluated by him as well. So I don't think that really applied in this particular situation.
That's a very good point. Being the expert at quarterback as you were at one point in time, what stands out about Matt Hasselbeck right now to you at this stage of his career?
I think just his knowledge and his comfort in what he does offensively. He's been one of those quarterbacks that's been very fortunate to play in one system. He has played for two teams, but he's only started for one team, and he played in the same system and was drafted by Mike Holmgren when he was with Green Bay. So he's had a chance to play in this system and really perfect it, and he really knows it inside out. And I think that's the knowledge he brings to the table. He's a very smart quarterback, but a little bit more athletically and physically gifted than people give him credit for.
Julius Jones was an offseason acquisition at running back. I realize that the season is not complete yet, but would you say his debut season in Seattle has been a success or failure?
I think it's been a success only because he started out as one of the top running backs in the league as far as yardage was concerned the first 3 or 4 weeks. But when the team, you know, started to lose and we were behind a bunch in ball games, he just didn't get the touches and the carries in the football games that you need to stay up there and be one of the top backs in this league. So he was relegated more to passing situations. Mo Morris is more of a passing situation back. So he just didn't get the touches that he was getting early in the season, and he has not had that type of performance over the course of the year. But I still think he's been a very positive acquisition based on what the running game has been for the Seahawks over the last 2 years prior to his arrival.
Mm-hmm. You, of course, also have a former Patriot wide receiver in Deion Branch who's back healthier than he has been. And I know that it seems, at least from my vantage point and from a lot of Patriots fans' vantage point, that it had to have been a little bit of a disappointment to this point in time. Do you think that he has shelf life in Seattle?
I think he does. You know, the unfortunate thing for Deion is he's just been hurt over the last 3 years of just different nagging injuries. It seems like one injury after another because he tries to come back maybe a little bit too soon, and he ends up aggravating another injury that was caused because of the injury that he had before. So I think that's one of the reasons he took as long as he did coming back from this last injury he had to his foot, because he just didn't want to come back too soon. But whenever he's on the field, he's been productive. So, yeah, you can say maybe he's a disappointment because he hasn't been on the field as much because of the injuries, but when he is out there, he's been very effective.
All right, Warren, I know that this is a 2-10 football team, but I'm certain that you found some silver linings in an otherwise dark cloud. What are some of the things that have surprised you in a positive sense through your observations of this football team thus far?
Well, you know, I just think the fact that the character that this team has shown and not given up. You know, I'm not going to really talk about different individual performances because there hasn't really been any individual performances that have stood out, just because you haven't had any guys out in the field long enough for a certain period of time to have had that type of stretch. If anything, some of the guys' performances have been kind of disappointing on the defensive side of the football, where we had four Pro Bowlers last year. But The thing that I am encouraged about is I watch these guys practice 2 or 3 times a week, and I see how hard they're still continuing to practice. I see that there's no moping around. I see that the locker room is still positive, and I see that they're still playing hard on Sundays. They're just kind of undermanned, and you know, they lost prior to this Dallas game. The 3 losses that they had were by a total of 11 points. So they're a team that's still in ball games, but they're just not finding a way to win those games like they used to.
And is there a matchup in particular, as you kind of begun your homework on this game, is there a matchup in particular that you're kind of looking forward to watching, individually speaking?
Whoever's lined up against Walter Jones, you know, Walter Jones is probably one of the better tackles in the National Football League. He's starting to get a little bit older in his career, but he always tends to line up against one of the opponent's best pass rushers. So whoever that might be, whether it's Mike Vrabel or maybe even Roosevelt Colvin, somebody that the Patriots just picked up, I always look to see at the matchup that Walter has, because I like to see how he can handle those guys usually one-on-one.
All right, Warren, I appreciate the time. I know it's a little bit short today, but it's greatly appreciated. It's wonderful to visit with you again, and continued success to you. Thank you.
All right, I'll see you this week. Thanks a lot.
You got it. It's Warren Moon, Hall of Fame quarterback, and, of course, the color analyst on the Seattle Seahawks radio network, anchored by Cairo 710 AM in Seattle, with us inside the playbook. All right, good stuff. Good start to today as well, getting a chance to visit with Warren Moon. So, you know, let's kind of look at it like this. Number one, all right, today, for those of you who are listening to the program, number one, how happy are you having Roosevelt Colvin back into the fold? How happy are you? Pleased? Displeased? Do you feel like they could have gotten out and gotten any other street free agent? What are your thoughts? What are your opinions on the Patriots signing linebacker Roosevelt Colvin again back into the fold? Was there somebody else out there that you think they perhaps should have gone after instead? That's number one, okay? I also am kind of curious. I mean, you have to expect this is going to happen. When you talk to someone like Warren, or when you talk to anybody who works for a team and is a part of their radio broadcast crew, naturally they're going to put the positive spin on it. But let's face it, you know, the Seattle team is 2-10 overall. How much does Seattle's lack of success this year influence your apathy? Let's be honest about it. Let's cut right to the chase. I think we're all still spoiled here. I think many of us realize, you know, what's what with this Patriots football team this year. That it is a struggle, has been a struggle, probably will continue to be one. But the fact is that because we're so used and conditioned to winning, dominating, to being in the playoffs, to winning titles, you know, to moving on, that kind of thing. And the team is struggling right now. And because this team has an incredible record over the last 5 years, especially after losses, Don't you kind of feel like this is a slam dunk this Sunday? Don't you kind of feel like this game is, you know, can we move on to something else here? I mean, be honest with yourself, okay? I'm being honest with you here. Don't you really think that the Patriots should roll over the Seahawks, even if it is a road game? Especially because the Seahawks are 2-10? What do they possibly have left to play for, in spite of what Warren Moon just said or what anybody says about this team? I'm not trying to denigrate the Seahawks or anybody else here. This is a human nature type of reaction. We all kind of think like this. I just simply want to know if you feel like that. Is this game a walkover in your mind? Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. So you've got two things to answer to today, okay? Love to give you things to think about, and then send me your thoughts via email, because that's how this show has to work. It's got to be a little interactive here. I can talk, I can give you what I know, and then you have to give me feedback on that. That's how it's supposed to work. Webradio@patriots.com. So number one, your thoughts on re-signing Roosevelt Colvin. Is there somebody else out there you would have preferred instead of? And are you apathetic? Do you just not care? Do you feel like this is a win, a walkover win for the Patriots on Sunday in Seattle? Webradio@patriots.com. All right, so that's how we get started today. We got a lot more to get to. I've got some news and notes to read through on the matchup with Seattle, because frankly, it's not that often you get a chance to play teams out on the left coast. I think we here on the East Coast always realize that. So we'll go through some of that for you. Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly will join us in the 3 o'clock hour as well. And who knows, maybe another surprise or two. But we'll get to all of that coming up in just a little bit right here inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa,
fresh lettuce,
guacamole,
cookies and
brownies,
homemade tortilla chips,
everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties,
soccer games,
birthday parties,
baby shower for my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh,
affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place, a once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Welcome back inside the playbook for a Wednesday. I'm John Rook. And again, if you're just tuning in, we just had a conversation with Hall of Fame quarterback Warren Moon as a part of the Seahawks broadcast crew. So if you missed out on that, well, all I can tell you is three words: download the podcast. And if you do that a little bit later on, then you'll be able to hear from Warren Moon as well. As you can download the podcast and listen to it anytime in case you missed the live broadcast. That's what we do here.
This is John Hanna, Patriot Hall of Famer. Download the podcast now.
See, and if a Patriots Hall of Famer tells you to download the podcast, then by all means, you must adhere to his wishes. So that's coming up. We mentioned that we'll get an update from practice today from Eric Scalavino and PFW in just a little bit here on the show, about another half hour or so. And then I believe that Matt Hasselbeck, the Seahawks quarterback, is holding his conference call with members of the Patriots media also in about a half an hour. So we hope to bring that to you as well before we're through here on the program today. This is the first time that the Patriots have played the Seahawks in 15 years. Don't really get a chance to play NFC teams, especially West Coast teams, all that often, right? You know, and just until a couple of days ago, you know, if you had said Seattle, what conference are they in? I would have told you AFC. That's just how old school I am, just remembering before they, you know, switched leagues. But it's the first time in 15 years as the Patriots kick off the last month of the regular season, clearly needing to win everything they still have on the schedule. Don't know what Seattle will say about that. I'm sure that, you know, Seattle, you know, as Moon suggested just a little while ago, these guys are going to go out there and play to win. Seen the quotes already this week from Mike Holmgren, Seattle's coach, that says, you know, hey, you know, we can't do anything about being 2-10. We're still going to go out there and play every game to win. And he says, his quote is, whatever that means as far as the roster, well, then that's what we have to do. Okay. This means that he's going to put the best available players out there, just like the Patriots would. And a lot of times, a lot of ways, that's very Bill Belichickian, isn't it? To me, at least right off the bat, this game boils down to two things. Number one, can they keep Matt Hasselbeck upright? He was sacked seven times on Thanksgiving Day against Dallas in that 34-9 loss. So you know that having the extra time to prepare and get ready for the Patriots certainly is going to benefit him, having a little extra couple of days between games. Number one, this is an opportunity for the Patriots. Maybe that's one of the reasons why Roosevelt Colvin decided to re-sign here. Who knows? Maybe he's licking his chops. You know, Moon said that, you know, that should be a key matchup. Whoever's going to be rushing on Walter Jones' side of the football, Jones being the left tackle for the Seahawks. Could it be a guy like Seymour? Could it be a guy like Colvin? Could it, you know, I mean, who, you know, think about it. Maybe it's like, hey, this is a great opportunity for me to get back in and make a name for myself and maybe even, who knows, earn another contract, earn another deal, get back in the good graces. I don't know if anybody really has that kind of foresight, but maybe you kind of understand where I'm coming from here. There is opportunity, especially for the Patriots. That's number one. Number two, the other thing that I think will kind of tip this game, this is really a chance for the Patriots offense to get back to one of the things that I think the offensive line does extremely well, and that's just play smash-mouth football, run football. Seattle's defense is undersized. It certainly has not been to their benefit In terms of their quickness or speed, because they haven't really been able to keep a lot of healthy bodies out there. And I think because they are somewhat undersized a little bit in the front seven, that teams have been able to physically overmatch them in some instances. And, you know, the Patriots had a rough week last week. Matt Light had a rough week last week, you know, with James Harrison and the Steelers. So maybe this is just a chance to go do some straight knockback football. Let's pound the middle with Sammy Morris. Why not? As long as you have him healthy, as long as you have him available, let's run between the tackles. Let's see what you can do. Let's control the ball. And let's see if we can't man up on, you know, a Seattle defense that has taken its own share of licks throughout the course of this season. So, I mean, that's really kind of where I think this whole thing boils down. Can the Patriots do that, number one? And number two, can Seattle on the other side of the football keep Hasselbeck upright? Now, if they keep him upright and they give him time, regardless of who he's throwing to, then he's certainly proven to be accurate and he can do some damage. And I think we all know that the Achilles heel for this Patriots team is still defense. By and large, it's still defense. And yes, even Matt Hasselbeck and the 2-10 Seattle Seahawks are capable at home of moving the ball and scoring and ultimately beating the Patriots. They are. If you don't put pressure on him, if you don't keep him uncomfortable in or out of the pocket, that's got to be a point of contention and a part of the game plan for the Pats this week. These teams haven't played each other since a regular season game in Seattle on September the 17th of 1993. So it's actually been a little bit more than 15 years since they've played. And since that time, here's a little interesting fact from Patriots PR. Since that time, the Patriots have played in every other NFL city. So they've gone the longest between trips to Seattle over anybody else in the league. The previous 14 matchups between New England and Seattle, 7-7. Couldn't be more even, right? 7 wins for the Pats, 7 wins for the Seahawks. Of course, the last time these two teams played was at Gillette Stadium 4 years ago, 2004. And the Patriots won a 30-20 game here at Gillette. And before that, you have to go back to 1993 again for the last time they played in Seattle. I think I just said that the first time they played in 15 years. First time they played in Seattle in 15 years is what I meant to say, because they played that 2004 game. I actually remember that one. See, Hasselbeck actually did not have a bad game at all in that game. So, at any rate, Patriots have won the most recent game, but it's been 15 years since they played in Seattle. That was at the old Kingdome, which obviously no longer stands. And then you have to go back to 1985. Before the last time they had played, they had played six games in Foxborough between appearances in Seattle. How about that? That's a real statistical anomaly, isn't it? Six times. They played three times at Old Sullivan, three times in Foxborough, and then, of course, they played in Gillette in 04. So that's bizarre. That's a real weird thing to have happen. But 7-7 overall. They played 12 times in a 14-year span from 1980 to 1993, but have only played the one time in 2004 since that time. So that's also a little bit of a statistical anomaly. The last time these two teams played in Seattle, that was prior to Bob Kraft's ownership of this team. James Bush Orthwine was the owner. And I believe at that time, some of us will remember that the team's future right here in New England was severely in doubt. So we dial it back a little bit, and I don't know if that's necessarily a pleasant memory you want to revisit, but it certainly all turned out well, did it not? And the Seahawks are the only non-divisional team that the Patriots have played twice in the regular season in the same year. Think about it for a second. Twice in the regular season in the same year and a non-divisional team. How does that happen? Well, that happened during that 93 season. That was the only year in which the league's 16-game schedule was played over an 18-week span, and each team was allotted 2 bye weeks that year. And the Patriots played them twice in 93. Bizarre. They lost in Foxborough 17-14. They lost at the Kingdome 10-9. So they lost both of those games in 93. Again, really kind of bizarre. But anyway, just kind of fill you up with some of the numbers between the lines as we look at it here. Let me get a couple of emails in here. Again, webradio@patriots.com is the email address. A couple of different things for you to sound off on today. Number one, your thoughts on re-signing linebacker Roosevelt Colvin into the mix. And was there somebody else out there that you thought might be a better fit? And number two, it sort of kind of tags along with what we talked about yesterday. Did you think the Patriots are still a playoff caliber team, what we talked about on yesterday's show? Are you complacent about this Sunday's game? Do you feel like this is a walkover game, a walkover win, just because it's 2-10 Seattle and because the Patriots should beat a perceived inferior opponent? Or is there any concern at all in your mind that this is a losable game for the Patriots? Webradio@patriots.com. All right, here we go. James in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina says, after Sunday's debacle, it can no longer be disputed. This year's Patriots are no longer one of the elite teams. You cannot be considered a top team when you have been blown out of three of your 12 games and have to struggle to win the close games the way the Patriots are famous for winning. I'm not saying they can't make the playoffs, but it is going to be hard to do so, and if they do, I don't see them getting by the first game. James always signs off by saying, have a great day. Well, thank you, James, for the sentiment, but wow. Okay, I think that's probably a little bit of realism creeping in there, and that's perfectly fine. I think we all realize that. Chances are not good to get back to the Super Bowl. Doesn't mean it cannot happen. We don't know how this team is going to, reinvent itself over the last month. It's clear they have to reinvent themselves in some way over this last month. Otherwise, you're right. James, you're absolutely right. They won't go any farther. If they even make the playoffs, they won't go any farther than that first wild card weekend. Like I kind of mentioned yesterday. Well, at least we don't have to worry about resting starters. We won't have that debate this year again. Because you're going to be playing wild card weekend one way or the other. I just, blown out of three of your 12 games. Well, being blown out is sort of a, I don't really know the exact way to put it, but I think it's sort of a relative term. The Patriots were blown out score-wise this past week against Pittsburgh. I mean, it was 33-10. But I didn't really think of the game as being a blowout. Did you? This was a 10-10 game at halftime. I think we all felt at halftime like this was a game that, the Patriots should have led at halftime after having, Randy Moss drop that, alleged touchdown pass. And even on top of that, Gostkowski missed the 27-yard field goal. And he's usually money. Kind of led me to believe that, something else is going to happen. But, at the very least, they could have gone in up 13-10 and should have gone up 17-10 at halftime. And I think that would have changed the entire complexion of the game. This was still a pretty close game, tight game, midway through the third quarter. And then, of course, that's when the turnovers started to take effect and Pittsburgh took advantage, as good football teams are supposed to do. So if the Patriots hadn't handed Pittsburgh opportunity, I'm saying I don't think that would have been a blowout, and I don't think anybody can really say that it would have been a blowout. The only game that I look at, in my estimation, that really was a blowout, and I'm not sure that it would have changed one way or the other, would probably, I'm even going to hesitate on that one, probably be Miami. I take that back. Score-wise, it would have been Miami because it was 25 points, back in September. But I feel like that is a game that had the Patriots been of full strength and Tom Brady been around and such, it was before Matt Castle really had continued to develop. I just think they would have found a way to win that one. The one game that I think that was a blowout that they really had no shot of winning was San Diego. That was a, 30-10 loss. So I would say blown out, using your words, James, is probably just once. And even so, it's three scores. I think over the course of the season, unless you know, you are an elite team. And I really think there's only a couple of teams that you could consider elite this year right now. Titans, probably. Giants, probably. And I don't really know that you can consider anybody else in the NFL thus far as an elite team. And here we are going into the last month of the year. I don't know that other teams don't get beat. I mean, teams throw up stinkers all the time. The Patriots, true, are not winning the close games like they have in the past. And I think a lot of that is simply because the personnel has changed. It's different. A lot of it's injured. I mean, there are 6-7 starters, you know, with the fact that James Webster went on IR yesterday. I mean, you know, the Patriots continue to have guys who have started games for them go down and out for the entire season. Again, not an excuse, but it is a contributing factor. So I think that's more liable to happen. What I think is also significant to note here is that I think there are some in the media, and we talked a little bit about this on yesterday's show, there are some of the media that are continually impressed with the Patriots' ability to just be competitive every week because of the number of injuries that they've had and because you have lost the NFL's reigning MVP. I mean, that would decimate most any other team, any other franchise, any other organization. And the Patriots continue to just reload. It's because of how they've built the depth in the team and in the organization, and, you know, that's and because of the system that they have in place here. It's a system that certainly just about every other team in the league, at one time or another, has tried to emulate, or at least try to copy part of, to work into their own plans. So in that regard, no, they're not an elite team, but it doesn't mean they're not a competitive team. There's a difference. And I think we all realize that stepping down from elite to just competitive, merely competitive, is a little bit of a change for us in covering it and following it and watching it, you know, in experiencing the Patriots. And so what if they don't get by the first game? So what? Fact is, right now, I think we would all, and correct me if I'm wrong here, please do. Please correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure you will. Send me the email, webradio@patriots.com. But wouldn't we all be happy, just happy to get to the playoffs this year? Are we that spoiled? Can't we consider what this season is as a single entity and forget about, you know, the past, you know, the successful past, sure, but for the time being, and just appreciate the struggles that this team has had to go through in order to reach the postseason if they get there? See, I think that's a story unto itself, and I think it's a story that won't really be truly, thoroughly appreciated here in New England or by anybody in Patriots Nation, so to speak. I think the national media will harp on it, will jump on it. If the Patriots make the playoffs, I think they'll be all over it. If the Patriots don't make the playoffs, I think that will be a significant story after Week 17. You know, they'll run through, all right, here's the playoffs, and here's the teams that have been eliminated, and oh my goodness, the Patriots are out. I think that'll still be a story because of what they have done in the past. Kind of a convenience using the past and then not using it. But, you know, that's what it is. You always look for the other angle. You always look for the other side of the story. And because the Patriots would be on the other side or the outside looking in this instance, that's going to be a story, especially for a team that was in the Super Bowl a year ago. But it'll be a huge story if they make the playoffs, considering everything that they've had to go through this year. And just getting to the playoffs, I think, is a major, major victory for this team. It is attainable. It won't be easy. And as we've said, this team will have to win 4 games to do it. Anything short of winning the next 4, I don't think they'll be there. In fact, I've gone on the limb and said anything short of 11-5, they won't make the playoffs. And, you know, after last week's games, and I said that a couple of weeks ago, after last week's games, I think we're a little bit closer to that realization because of the way that they lost. I thought originally they'd win the Pittsburgh game. They didn't. So now they've really put themselves, you know, against the wall. All right, let's check another one here. This one comes from, as soon as it loads, thank you very much. Don't you just love computers that decide to take their sweet time and freeze up on you? Perfect. Okay. Well, while I wait for the computer to load here and we get the email, couple of other things to pass on to you. I looked at the fact, and we talked briefly about this again yesterday, but I looked at the fact that the Patriots, with Brian Lowe, that they're going to stay out on the West Coast this next week and train again at San Jose State. Let's see. It's the second set, as we realize, of back-to-back West Coast games that they've played this year. So they'll be playing in Oakland next week. They went 1-1, as we all realize, back-to-back games earlier this season, beating San Francisco on October 5th and then losing to San Diego big time on October the 12th. It's kind of weird, though, because the other thing I noticed, and I don't know if this has dawned on anybody, but they're playing all four of the West Coast NFL teams on the road. They didn't get anybody at home. They've got everybody on the road. Why the heck is that? Why? How did that happen? In doing a little further research here, come to find out it's the first time in team history that New England is going to play four times on the West Coast in the same season. How about that one? Didn't realize that. Patriots and the Jets are both this year going to play all four West Coast teams on the road. So they're the first NFL teams from the Eastern time zone to play four times on the West Coast since the 2005 New York Giants. Kind of wondering maybe what the Giants did in that particular year. They went 2-2 during an 11-5 season. And, by the way, the Giants did make the wild card team in the playoffs that year in the NFC. So, anyway, some interesting facts to pass along there. Well, the computer has completely and totally just decided to screw up on me here. So, Dan, let's do this. Let's sneak in a timeout. We'll have Eric Scalavino coming up at a little after 3 o'clock to give us an update on practice and get a little bit more of the lowdown on this matchup with the Seattle Seahawks. Matt Hasselbeck, who's conference call with members of the Patriots media, will be coming up at the tail end of the 3 o'clock hour, so we'll try to pass that on to you as well. And do send your emails, webradio@patriots.com. I'm going to get this thing rebooted here, and we'll get them pouring in, and so we'll get them sent in here. A couple of things. Number one, Patriots re-signing linebacker Roosevelt Colvin. What are your thoughts on bringing Rosie back into the Patriots fold? Is there someone else out there that you would have rather have seen? And number two, are you complacent about Sunday's game in Seattle? After all, it's a 2-10 team. Do you feel like the Patriots should win? Webradio@patriots.com. All right, we'll get to some of those coming up right here inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips, and we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through.
So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only Super Regional Lifestyle and Entertainment Center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas Tree Shops, Off-Broadway Shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene Restaurant and Bar, a four-star hotel, Showcase live entertainment venue, and the long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information, and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Hour number two inside Patriots Playbook, rolling along on a Wednesday. I'm John Rook, Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly, rolling in from practice here. By the way, the email is back up and running, thank goodness. We're able to switch accounts. Isn't that lucky how you know? See, I knew there was a reason to have multiple email accounts. So anyway, that part's good. Webradio@patriots.com. Your thoughts on the Patriots re-signing Roosevelt Colvin, and also whether or not you're just complacent about this game, whether or not you just kind of mailed this one in on Sunday, because it is a 2-10 football team that the Patriots are facing in Seattle. I kind of feel like maybe, you know, you shouldn't be taking anybody for granted in the present-day National Football League, nor if you're in the position that the Patriots are in, you should be taking anybody for granted, because you're probably just not good enough to take teams for granted or other, you know, players for granted.
Well, their playoff lives are on the line too, John, at this point. So, yeah, they certainly can't take anybody for granted. They have to just you know, it, as cliche as it sounds, they have to worry about this week and this game and try not to worry about the external things, because if they don't take care of their business, the external things won't matter.
You know, that's Eric, that's absolutely, you know, I think we, and using the collective we here, you know, those who cover the Patriots, realize that. I doubt very seriously that many fans look at it like that. I really do. I think fans here, as I suggested earlier, are still way too spoiled over the success of this team, and that it's a fait accompli that, you know, God, if they can't beat Seattle, then they don't deserve to go, yada, yada. And yet they don't realize that there are many different mitigating factors that go into, you know, the game plan and a game and a week and the result of that game and everything else. There's so many different things that are out there. The huge story here is that the Patriots can find a way to get back on track and win and even reach the playoffs. That's the ultimate goal, and that would be the ultimate story for this season.
Yeah, you know, they're fighting against a couple of teams now. I think Miami obviously tied in second place in the division there, and also Baltimore at this point fighting for that wild card spot, because it's going to take a Herculean effort, I think, to win back the AFC East outright from the Jets. I just think that the mountain is a little too high to climb right now. It's not impossible, obviously. You know, the Jets could go on a skid. New England could win, you know, three or even four of the remaining four games, and they could be right back on top again. And, you know, as things shake out, you know, it's still possible mathematically, I think, for them to get a bye week.
Yes, mathematically it is, because, let's see, they would be two games behind the Steelers, correct?
If they ended up, I guess that's right, because
They're 7-5. The Steelers are 9-3.
Right.
I mean, you pretty much have to say
two and a half games, but you know.
Yeah, you'd have to say that they're really three games behind the Steelers because of the head-to-head. So Pittsburgh would probably have to lose their last four.
Yeah,
three of their last four.
Like I said, mathematically it's possible, but I think it might be a little far-fetched to expect that to happen. But I think their best case scenario is, you know, they're only a game behind the Jets.
Well,
that's the more plausible one, is try to win the division.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mentioned that yesterday. I think that's the more believable scenario, is considering what, you know, lies ahead of them, especially what's on the schedule with Indianapolis and even Baltimore to an extent. Winning the division may be the easiest route to go. Now, Baltimore has an extremely hard schedule in the closing 4 weeks. So
they have Dallas, right? They have Washington, Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
It escaped me. I just looked it up a short time ago, too, because I wanted to. Oh, Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I think Pittsburgh's the last game, and then there's one other game in there that I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's difficult, but I could easily see them winning three of those last four games.
They could, but if they lost three of the last four, then that would still give you an opportunity. So
there's
opportunity there. It's going to be difficult, and that's why, you know, the Patriots really don't have any room for error here over the last 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've pretty much got to go out and win it, and so that's why I kind of find it a little it's surprising in one way, and it's not surprising in another. You know, that's why I ask about the apathy amongst the fans today, because, you know, frankly, I think you look at it on paper and you say, it's 2-10 Seattle.
They should
win this. But, I mean, when you're in the position the Patriots are in, you don't have any reason to be apathetic with anything.
Right. And you know, I also hearken back to a few years ago when they went 14-2 and won the Super Bowl in one of those seasons. I believe it was 2004. They had actually only lost one game, and it was in December, late December. They went down to Miami for a Monday night game, and Miami was, I think, 1-15 that year or 2-14. And what happened? Patriots laid an egg, and they lost on Monday night to a horrible Dolphins team at that point. And, you know, obviously it didn't affect their season. They won the Super Bowl and all, but everybody went down there expecting, you know, they're just going to roll through this and go on. And what happened? They lost. It's the way this is in the NFL. Any team can beat any other team. The margin between good teams and mediocre teams is really tiny. And it doesn't take a whole lot for one team to be that much more motivated on a Sunday or a Thursday night or whenever to beat the other team, no matter how talented the other team might be or how much better they are or what their records might be at the time. Anything can happen. And this Seattle team kind of scares me, because they are at that stage in the season where you think, oh, they're a pushover, you should easily beat that team. Yeah, you probably should, but their starting quarterback's coming back. Their best receiver is back, who used to be one of New England's receivers.
Right.
New England's secondary is taking hits every week. They just lost Jason Webster, who they had brought in to help with some depth after they'd lost a few guys. Now, that's four defensive backs who've gone on IR this year.
Right.
They've lost a couple of the linebackers who may or may not be out for the season, but because we still don't know about Adalis Thomas, but they brought in Rosie Colvin to add some depth because Pierre Woods got hurt the other day. This is a defense that really hasn't lived up to its billing this year, and they're sustaining all of these injuries. And Seattle's offense, I'm sorry, but even with Hasselbeck and Branch, Hasselbeck's a good quarterback. Branch is a good receiver. Their rookie tight end, Carlson, the kid from Notre Dame, he looks like he can play.
Yeah, he's a pretty good player. So, that's absolutely spot on because that's exactly what I said. To me, I thought this game boils down to a couple of different things. Number one, whether or not the Seahawks can keep Hasselbeck upright. Fact is Dallas just pounded him unmercifully. So that's number one. And number two, whether or not the Patriots can continue to do what other teams have done against Seattle defensively, and that is basically overpower an undermanned, somewhat undersized defense.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Patriots can, answer affirmatively in both of those questions, then, yeah, they should win the game. But, Seattle is not what I would call a typical 2-10 team. This is a team that has, had a tremendous amount of success in recent years. And, we talked to Warren Moon in the last hour, Eric, and, and he thought that this program, that team had certainly risen from the levels of mediocrity like they might have been, say, 10 years or so ago when he was there. But he wasn't going to say that.
Right.
and the fact is that they're very competitive and that this team is probably a lot closer in terms of, where they thought they were going to be in terms of personnel if everybody was healthy. To 10-2, then 2-10.
Right. Yeah, I still think of them. They had a lot of injuries and they've had their struggles this year, but I still look at them as a potentially dangerous team, especially going. This is going to be the start of a 2-game West Coast trip, the second of such this season for the Patriots. It's going to be in Seattle, which is going to be kind of cold and rainy. And that's the Patriots are used to playing in that kind of weather here, but to travel all the way across the country and do it against a team that's struggling, this is a classic game where the team that should win possibly is going to get into a lion's den, if you will, where it's sort of a trap where you think that the other team, looking at just on the face of it, looking at their record, that it's going to be an easy game. And I don't know. I'm a little bit nervous about it, John. I got to be honest with you.
Well, we'll continue to go through some of the things with Seattle here in a moment. But I wanted to get an update on what you might have seen at the media viewing portion of practice today, and if there's anything late going on.
Yeah. Well, it was an interesting day actually in the locker room and out at practice. You've obviously already talked about the Colvin signing. We also got to talk today for the first time to Wes Welker, the first time since he got that devastating hit by Ryan Clark. And he was asked about that. Obviously, that was the big thing everybody wanted to talk to him about. And, to his credit, he said, look, it was a good football play. The ball was tipped, and the guy came in and made a play. And so he wasn't really griping about it not being legal or ethical or whatever. He just said, hey, that's what it was. This is football. And also said that, they wanted to know how he's feeling, how he responded to the hit. And he's like, we're just going to have to see, how he responds to it. But he said, when you get those kind of things, you just got to get up and try to shake them off and try to bounce back the best you can. He was out at practice today.
Okay.
Along
so
with everyone
was,
else. That, he was
yeah,
taking that's... part in drills. So it looks like he's on his way. Coach Belichick was asked about it in his press conference today. And he said, Wes looked fine after the game. And I talked to him this morning and he seemed fine. And
so no concussion that we know of?
Well, not that we know of, not that's been disclosed. And he certainly didn't look like there was anything lingering from it. But a concussion, it's hard to tell with those kind of things.
Sure.
It's not like there's often a very obvious, visible repercussion from it, any sort of scarring or anything. So that it's just a matter of, gauging the way the guy responds to questioning and such, but he seemed okay. I wouldn't be surprised if he had, a concussion of some sort. I don't know how severe it was or not, but
Well, he's back out there practicing.
He was out there, and
I cannot
imagine
that
around,
they would be taking. Yeah, they wouldn't take any chances with that. They have to be very cautious with.
I would hope not.
Head
yeah.
injuries.
I certainly would hope not. So he was asked about that. That was probably big story 1A. I would say big story or 1B. Big story 1A would be obviously the Colvin signing because Pierre Woods was not out at practice, nor was rookie Vince Redd. So those are two outside linebackers who were brought in, you know, lately after Adalys Thomas went out with his arm injury, who, you know, Redd was, wasn't really playing as much at that outside spot, but he was there to sort of back up Woods, who had moved up to take Thomas's spot. And both of those guys were out. So during his little talk with the media, Colvin said today that when Thomas got hurt a few weeks ago, he sort of got the idea that maybe this was an opportunity for him to come back here. Mm-hmm. And he sort of, I guess, broached the subject with the team, and they kind of weren't ready at the time. But now that, I guess, Woods got that bizarre mouth injury, is what they're calling it, and Redd wasn't at practice, I guess maybe there's a little bit more to that injury situation than we kind of know about right now. So that opened up the opportunity for Colvin to come back here.
So is it your understanding then that it was actually Colvin that initiated the interest between the parties?
Well, I think he made it the way he answered the question, it sounded like when Thomas got hurt, he sort of either he broached the subject or he thought he would get a call and he didn't. It really wasn't clear exactly. My impression was that he sort of approached the team and said, hey, you know, do you guys need help? And they kind of might have said, no, not right now.
Mm-hmm.
But then after Sunday against Pittsburgh, they clearly do need the help. And so they called him, and he got the call on Monday, he said.
Gotcha.
So I can't say with 100% certainty that that's, you know, that he initiated that first time around. Because after that, he kept reiterating that he wasn't sitting by the phone waiting for teams to call him when he got cut in Houston. And mm-hmm. So I don't think I'm not quite sure if he actually actively went out and pursued the Patriots. I think maybe he just thought in his mind, oh, there's a linebacker hurt on a team I used to play for. Maybe they'll give me a call. And maybe they didn't. But then, you know, it took another couple of weeks for something else to happen for that to transpire. But interesting. You know how Rosie is. He's sort of a talkative guy, usually very upbeat. He seemed very different today, John. He seemed very a little subdued, I'd say. Definitely.
Well, let's face it. You know, he's been humbled a little bit.
A little introspective is the word I guess I would use to describe it, because, you know, for the last few months, just this, you know, 10 months ago, he was part of a team that was undefeated and going to what they thought was the fourth Super Bowl win. They ended up losing. He was hurt. He was on IR. He ended up getting cut in the offseason. He got a second chance with Houston, only to get cut at the end of training camp. And, you know, they didn't really think he had anything left. And it's not like they're competing for a playoff spot either. So, yeah, I think there is a little bit of humbling to what's gone on in his life in 2008. And then he also started off the whole session with the media today by saying it was bittersweet for him to be back here because, you know, he enjoys the being with his teammates, and he knows the system and everything. But there were some personal situations, was how he described it, that he's dealing with right now. And he wouldn't really elaborate on what those were. But, yeah, he seems like a guy who's sort of maybe gotten things in perspective a little bit, and things have maybe changed him a little. He wasn't quite...
Do you get the sense maybe, Eric, that he's just upset at the business end of this, is what sent him on his way, you know, from New England in the first place?
Yeah, there could be an element of that. I kind of got the sense that having been, you know, when you're a player in any sport and you've been doing it all your life, and then finally you get to a point where it looks like it's over, you start to mentally you start to look at things differently, look at the world differently. I guess just basing it on what, you know, players I've heard talk about this subject.
Sure.
When you play for as long as those guys have, you know, well over a decade or more, and then it's time to. It seemed like when he got cut in Houston that was kind of it. No other teams were calling him, and it didn't seem like he had anything left. And so maybe in his mind, mentally, you know, he was spending time with his family. He has the UPS stores that he's involved in. He was starting to go to take care of those things more on a daily basis. And, you know, maybe it just he started to maybe take stock of where he is in his life at this point. And then all of a sudden, this opportunity comes up in New England again, and maybe he's like, oh, well, you know, So, you know, maybe he's in some sort of transitional phase right now that is hard to deal with, because when you've been an athlete for so many years and it's all you've ever known, and then suddenly you think you're done, and then all of a sudden there's another chance. I don't know. It's again, I'm just speculating, but it certainly seemed like there was more to what Colvin had to say than what he said.
It'll be interesting to see if we can, you know, get some further aspect of that story out of him as the weeks progress here. Just from a pure football sense, I mean, what are your thoughts on him being back into the fold?
Well, they clearly need help, and it's almost a perfect situation where you can bring in a guy who doesn't really have that. He'll have a steep learning curve. In other words, it won't be long before he's up to speed on the defense and what his role is going to be. That's a best case scenario, I think. You know, if you were to bring just some guy off the street who'd never played in the system before at this stage in the season, it'd have been really difficult for him to have any meaningful impact. But you know, Colvin was a veteran here for several years, and he knew the system already, and he was only on this team last year. You know, so not really a lot has changed. It's still Dean Pease at coordinator, and it's still basically the same teammates he played alongside. He had Adalis and Vrabel and Brewski. You know, Mayo and Guyton are new to the mix, but you know, it won't be long, I don't think, before he can mesh in with those guys. But
Mayo and Guyton were the reason he was gone to begin with, probably.
Well, but those guys were on the inside, and
well,
Colvin,
that's true.
Colvin's on an outside guy,
yeah.
And you know, honestly, John, the outside guys, you know, Vrabel had a career year statistically last year. And Thomas made some great plays when Colvin went down and he had to replace him on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
But there really hasn't been a good pass rush from that outside spot this year.
No, there hasn't.
And if Colvin can resurrect even, you know, half of what he used to be able to do, that's still probably going to be an improvement at that spot. And he, you know, he talked about how he loves, you know, rushing the passer is his love. That's always what he's been known for, is making plays rushing the passer. I think it'd be a great element if they can infuse him quickly and he can make some plays rushing the passer, because that's really where they've been lacking this year, and it's helped to expose how bad the flaws are in the secondary, because if you don't have pressure on the quarterback, you have quarterbacks who can pick your defense apart, especially in the secondary. If you can disrupt that quarterback's timing at all, that takes a big burden off the secondary, having to defend passes all game, and you know, especially when you don't know who's going to be playing corner or safety every week with all these guys getting hurt. So,
right? Did he say at all why it didn't work in Houston?
He just said that he went there and tried to, you know, bring the same sort of playmaking abilities that he had shown in Chicago and New England, and that they felt he wasn't up to par, and he kind of just left it at that. And you know, I think when they let him go, I think he just, you know, and the phone didn't ring off the hook from other teams.
Right.
I think he maybe started to realize, hey, maybe this is it. You know, and really started mentally thinking about it that way. I think if he gets in to play this weekend or even the next week and has a chance to make some plays, maybe you'll see some of that fire and that energy reinvigorated. You know, but until he goes out there and does it, you know, maybe there's a little, you know, he was a very confident guy. He was always a very confident guy. Maybe there's a slight little element of self-doubt there, and maybe he needs to prove something to himself that he can do it again.
Right.
I'm not sure. I'm curious, though. I think, like I said, I think this is a best-case scenario. You're at a position where you need help, and you can bring in a guy who doesn't really have much to learn, and he's a proven playmaker. Whether he can still do it remains to be seen, but you know, at least you know what you're getting with Colvin,
right?
And that's better than not knowing.
There was, of course, some other news made around the NFL today. I'd be curious to note if anybody was asked in the locker room if there was any reaction to it all. Number one, the six players, including, seemed like pretty much the entire Minnesota Vikings defensive line, suspended for four games by the NFL. Earlier yesterday for violating the league's anti-doping policy. Anybody have anything to say at all about that?
I don't think anyone was asked about that because it was kind of tough to get sound from anyone else today, because
They're in a grumpy mood today?
No. It wasn't that. It was that everyone in the media was so focused on making sure they got Colvin.
Yeah.
So that you know how it is. You get in the locker room. You only have a 45
right.
minutes. So everybody went to his locker immediately to get a good spot to try to get their sound.
And then
a guy
it,
like Welker came yeah. out, and then everybody's like, oh, we have to get Welker because we hadn't talked to him since then. So everybody rushed
right.
over to Welker, got him,
right.
then rushed back to Colvin. So there wasn't really a lot of and there weren't a lot of guys in the locker room to begin with, but there weren't many reporters asking questions of other players because they were all worried about making sure they got what they got, you know, today. So
Understood.
Yeah, that really wasn't anything talked about today.
By the way, in case anybody missed it, it was defensive linemen Kevin and Pat Williams of Minnesota, long snapper Brian Pittman of Houston, Charles Grant and Will Smith of the Saints, along with Deuce McAllister. Those were the six players that will be losing 4 weeks worth of paychecks. The other thing, you mentioned, obviously, everybody had to, you know, talk to Wes Welker. Was there any reaction from anybody else in the locker room over the fact that Mike Pereira from the NFL, the head of the NFL officials, basically said that was a legal hit that Ryan Clark put on him?
Well, like I said, the only people who really talked today were Colvin, Welker, talked to groups of reporters. There might have been one or two other players who talked one-on-one with actually, Seymour did talk, too. I take that back. Seymour addressed the media as well. I wasn't really in on that particular conversation, though. When I did get in on it, I was only there for a minute or two, and he was talking about Colvin coming back. So I don't know if he was asked about Welker's hit or not. But, I don't think anybody did address it. And Welker only addressed it, like I said, saying that he felt it was, you know, a good play. And it was fine with him. At least that's what he's going with anyway. Whether he, you know, feels like that in his heart of hearts, you know, we don't know. But
right.
he was saying the right things today anyway.
Well, yeah, you have to feel like, you know, he's not going to say, oh, you know, I'm surprised that he didn't get penalized, or I'm surprised that, you know, or, you know, I'm surprised he didn't get fined or whatever. I mean, frankly, I'm surprised that there was not a fine there, especially since we've seen, you know, similar types, if not the exact play. We've seen similar types of, shall we say, questionable hits. Vince Wilfork has certainly been a part of it. Rodney Harrison's been a part of it in the past that have come through with monetary fines. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect that would be a suspension, but the man left his feet.
Well, I don't think leaving your feet isn't really the problem. I think because, you know, how many times have you seen a goal line play where a running back is diving over and the linebacker
is
jumping
over?
Well, that's
true, but he left his foot and he attacked, or, you know, in other words, it was a head first thing, and he ended up making some helmet to helmet contact. And, you know, number one, to me, I thought that sort of hurling yourself as a missile was what the NFL was trying to outlaw.
Spearing,
and number two, it was clear to me to see that Welker had begun to pull up on the play, and he still got whacked.
Right. Yeah. Welker clearly was letting up. He was clearly slowing down, and I think that's the main issue here, John. You hit on it. Spearing versus just plain leaving your feet. Spearing, I think the intention being if you lead with your head. And you know, launch yourself like as a missile at another player and lead with your helmet, that's where you get into the situation of it being punishable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've only seen one or two replays of it, and both of them have been full speed, so I haven't really gotten a chance to see this play slow down or from a different angle. But other people that I know who have seen it say that it wasn't helmet to helmet, that it was shoulder to shoulder pad, and that it when you see it in slow motion, you can tell that it wasn't a helmet-to-helmet hit. I haven't seen it, so I can't vouch for that, but people that I know who've seen it say that, so I'll have to take their word for it. And maybe that's what the league office, maybe that's what Mike Pereira saw, because he obviously had to look at it to make a ruling. And if that's what he saw, you know, and it was kind of close, you know, the ball was sailing off in the other direction, but, you know, Welker clearly was letting up. He saw that the ball was going off, and he was slowing down, like you said. I think it was a late hit, no doubt. Whether it was a spear, I really can't say because, like I said, I haven't seen enough of it in slow motion or for different replays to be absolutely sure. All I could tell is when I saw it live, I felt like it was clearly a late hit, and the refs were well within their rights to throw the flag, and I think that was the right call. I am a little surprised, too, like you, that he didn't get fined for it, because I think we've seen hits like that have gotten fined before.
Right.
But, again, maybe they looked at it enough times and felt that there wasn't technically enough evidence to say that it was helmet to helmet and intentional. So maybe that's why he's getting away without a fine. That's the only thing I
find the whole thing actually just somewhat incredible, to be honest with you, because it seems like there have been lesser transgressions to me in my own estimation. And maybe okay, I'll admit it, maybe I'm jaded a little bit by the Patriots and being here and seeing it, but it seems like some of these transgressions that guys like Wilfork and Harrison specifically have been fined for were for lesser violations than what we thought we all saw this past Sunday in Pittsburgh. I'm just saying there's a different set of standards. It's applied differently every time you get similar plays.
Seems like
and to
it,
me,
yeah.
This is where the NFL officials and the officiating crew and the league office and everybody, this is where they fail miserably in terms of, you know, passing this information on to their officials. I mean, this is certainly a strong case in my mind for, you know, bringing in officials, you know, as full-time employees. Mm-hmm. Because quite frankly, you know, this type of thing you would hope could be avoided if you have everybody on the same page and everybody well-schooled in what is a foul and what is not, and what the rule is in this instance. And to me, listening to Pereira, in fact, he was giving some explanations on NFL Network about the play as well, which is where I saw it. To me, even his reason was vague.
Yeah, that tends to be, I notice when he gives an official ruling, it tends to be very convoluted.
Right.
And it ends up raising a lot more questions sometimes than it answers. But the question I really have now, John, is why is it so many players' instinct to hit a guy even close to the head? Why is that their first instinct to go for that part of the body? Why not just wrap up like midsection? Wrap with your arms. Why do so many guys, their first instinct when they see a player come across the middle, why do they feel like they have to take the guy's head off? Why can't they just make a tackle with their shoulders?
I don't know the answer to that.
That to me is the more troublesome question. You know, why are so many guys intent on to me, that's subliminally or subconsciously, they're trying to hurt a guy.
Well, of course they are. It's a physical game. It's a violent game. We know that. You've played it. It's just guys don't use that kind of thinking. And I think the whole idea behind this is, you know, they want guys to think before they react. And of course, there are some who I can see their side of the story. There are some that feel that should not be in football because football is an emotional sport and that you lose something if you have to stop and think before you react. And that's sort of the beauty of football, if you will. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the health and safety, and the NFL has maintained from day one that they're all about the safety of the players in this particular instance. They want, you know, renegades go on there out there headhunting, so to speak.
Right.
This flies in the face of that. They're allowing this to go on. Mm-hmm. So be clear. One way or the other, is it going to be the wild, wild west out there where guys are going headhunting, or are you going to fine and or suspend guys for similar hits?
Right.
It's one thing or the other. It can't be both.
But I guess, you know, my point would be if I had, you know, any sort of power to make change in this regard, would be if you have a habit, any sort of habit, whatever it is, smoking or, I don't know, brushing your teeth with your left hand, whatever it is. If you want to change that habit, you have the power to do that. You have to focus. You have to, you know, for a while you have to change your whole way of thinking. But if you keep repeating the different way of doing it, eventually the new way of doing it will become second nature, and that will become your new habit. So what I guess these players need to do, if their instinct is to lead with their head and try to take another guy's head off, there really needs to be an effort to get them back to the fundamentals of tackling and having it be wrap up, hit with your shoulder, lead towards the midsection, and wrap up with two hands when you're going to hit. And I think there needs to be a concerted effort to try to get guys to think that way again. Because I think for too many years we've seen players not tackle. I mean, I see it on this team a lot. There are players who try to make tackles without wrapping up with their two arms.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to throw their body in there and hope that the guy will trip over them. Well, this is the NFL. The guys are at least as big or bigger than you, throwing your body at their feet isn't going to tackle them in a lot of cases. And you see a lot of whiff tackles that way. And some guys are just trying to make that big hit where they're concussing guys all the time. They need to go back. There needs to be some sort of, whether it's in the off season, you know, maybe during the season there's not enough time to do it because they're too worried about game plans or whatever, but there are enough passing camps, there are enough OTAs where they need to get back to teaching these guys who are professionals the fundamentals of tackling. Because I think tackling has become a lost art in this day and age in the NFL.
I couldn't agree more. I just don't. I think that because there's mixed signals being sent here, to be honest with you, Eric, there's mixed signals being sent, you know, when it comes to enforcement and how, mm-hmm. you know, officials, you know, what is a foul and what isn't a foul. I don't know that anybody will ever teach the exact right way. I don't even know if they're capable, if coaches are capable of teaching that way, because they're not sure what is the correct and what is, you know, a finable offense.
Well, I'll tell you what then. They know what's not a finable offense. So teach that. Teach what you know is the right way to tackle. The right way to tackle is keep your head up, lead with your shoulder, and wrap up with two arms. That you know is legal, right?
Yeah.
That's not going to get you a fine. Teach that. Teach that and only that. And if that's all that you're learning and seeing in practice day after day after day, eventually that's going to become habit for you. It's going to become rote. Mm-hmm. And if they do that, that's not going to get you a fine. It's never going to get you a fine. If you keep your head up, if you tackle at the midsection, that's not fine. You can hit a quarterback in the midsection. That's fine. You can't hit him below the knees, and you can't hit him above the shoulders. The midsection, that's fine on any player. If they just would teach that and get that through these guys' heads, I think you'd see less of these incidents.
Yeah, you're probably right. All right, let's squeeze in one more time out here. Then we've got some emails from some folks that have been good enough to respond to our questions today about Roosevelt Colvin and whether or not they're somewhat complacent about this Sunday's game against Seattle. And then, as I understand it, our conference call today is not with Matt Hasselbeck. It's actually with Deion Branch, former Patriot receiver. So it'll actually be good to hear from him today, and we'll try to get to that before the end of the program as well. Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly in the house, as well as we continue inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips, and we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So,
Stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary. Plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Hooginger tried to start the sending out an SOS a little early, don't you think, Eric?
That's he's been doing a good job with the bump music.
He really
lately.
Has been.
I like it.
I was about to
good
say,
choices.
This is very appropriate for today, I thought.
Yeah. Sending it out to Rosie Colvin.
Well, that. Sending it out to everybody in general. I mean, the fact is the Patriots have their butts back against a wall here as they mm-hmm. go into Seattle for this Sunday. So,
yeah.
They sent the SOS out to Rosie Colvin, and we'll find out, obviously, in due time whether or mm-hmm. not, it's a good move. Are you surprised it might not have been someone else? And by that, I mean, I did see where Cincinnati signed Victor Hobson today.
Oh, did they? I didn't
yes,
see that.
Yes, they did.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not really surprised at that because, well, honestly, Hobson came in here in the summer with big expectations, and it didn't seem like he picked up this defense as well as everyone thought he was going to, especially having played in a version of it in New York with Mangini. With Colvin, he was here a few years prior to that, and he did perform. He did pick up the defense pretty well, so if you had a choice between two guys, I think it was clear that Colvin was the better option to go with. Now, Hobson did play on the outside more. They tried to make him an inside backer when he came here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the outside was his more natural position, but he was never really known as a ferocious pass rush specialist where Colvin was, and that's exactly what the Patriots were lacking so far this season, as we talked about earlier in the show.
Right, right.
And so I don't think it's a surprise at all. I mean, again, no other teams were knocking down Hobson's door either for the past few months. So, he came in, he gave it an effort, and, some guys just don't fit in with certain teams. And I just think that might have been the case with Hobson. And Colvin was just a logical choice to come back.
I don't disagree at all. I was just thinking, obviously they didn't think enough of Rosie Colvin, so they sent him packing mm-hmm. last year. They brought in Victor Hobson this year thinking he might be a better option. Obviously it did not turn out that way, so when you have your mm-hmm. choice between one or the other, they ended up deciding on Colvin.
The Colvin thing might have been financial as well. There might have mm-hmm. been an element to that where they weren't sure how he was going to respond to that injury because, and apparently he didn't. He said he was fine, but maybe he didn't respond as well as Houston thought he was going to respond either because he didn't make it over there. And maybe their concerns, the Patriots' concerns, were legitimate as far as what they thought Colvin had left. But at this point in the season when you're, in desperate need of depth at a position, he's clearly an upgrade over any rookie or some other free agent who you might have been able to get at this point. Whether, regardless of the fact that he hasn't really played it, seriously in 2 or 3 months.
Let's see. Keith in Derby, England sends this note. He says, "Thanks for a great show. Between Playbook and PFW in progress, we foreign fans are well served. I've been following the Patriots since 1985 and will be a Pats fan come what may, but I don't think that they're going to get into the playoffs this year. Last year, the offense was so good that the flaws in the defense were well and truly masked.
Mm-hmm.
This year, those flaws are exposed because the offense is less effective, can't rack up the score quickly enough so that the opponents have to go to the air early in the game, giving the defense a much easier ride. The people who have had to step into the various holes as starters have suffered injuries, and the coaches who've managed to keep the team playing as well as they have must be given a huge amount of credit. But this year, we've had the bad luck to compare with last year's, and it's finally telling. And he says, P.S., I've told my wife I'm going to sell our grandchildren if need be to get tickets for next year's game at Wembley, and she thinks I'm joking.
Hey, don't listen. You know, you can't be selling your kids for tickets.
No.
I mean, I don't have any, but you know, I'm sure that I've heard from other parents that it's tempting sometimes to maybe unload your kids, but you wouldn't feel that way, would you, John? Depends on the day, right?
No, not really.
That's something I don't know if you've talked about it at all in the show or not, but that's a pretty interesting move, though. I think the NFL picking New England to go on that trip next year.
Well, you know, honestly, I'm a little surprised. I thought for sure that maybe that would come one of those things that, you know, maybe the NFL would have asked Bob, you know, Kraft to do as a favor because, you know, maybe of his business ties or whatever, or because the Patriots are closer and because of the fact that England is in our name. I just thought that, to me, that made sense. But, you know, maybe the Patriots said to him, and here's what I kind of surmised yesterday, Eric. I said, maybe the Patriots said, okay, yeah, we'll go as long as we don't lose the home game revenue.
Well, and they certainly aren't going to lose that because that was an already scheduled road game against
right.
Tampa. So that was probably one of the things they had to agree to. And it also tells me that, I mean, again, this is just speculation on my part, but New England was supposed to play in China last summer
mm-hmm.
for the one-year countdown to the Beijing games. And it didn't happen. And then they thought, well, it'll get postponed till 2009. Well, obviously, they're not going to play in China in 2009. They're not going to play two international games with the same team in one season. And I don't even think that it just looks to me like that's not going to happen at all. So I think to make up for that, because New England was going to go to China the second time around on the postponed time. So I think that leads me to believe that the China game isn't going to happen at all for any team. And I think New England is getting
More of an NFL doing, or do you think it's more the Patriots doing?
No, I think it's just too difficult right now to break into that Chinese market the way the NFL had hoped they were going to do. Again, it's I'm just speculating on it, just from I've seen and what I've heard.
Well, yeah, we realize that's all this is. Speculation.
But I don't know. My feeling was that it was a difficult proposition to begin with, trying to break into China. A few years ago, and I just think it's just not feasible right now. I think it's a lot easier to do the London thing, or if they want to play in another European city, that might be a possibility at some point, but I don't know. There just seems to be too many hoops that you have to jump through to have anything take place in China. I mean, you saw it during the Olympics this past summer. A lot of reporters weren't getting the type of access they thought they were going to get, and there were, you know, restrictions on things they could do or see or whatever, and you know, do you really need to go through all that just to try to get a new fan base to try to like your game? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's worth it, John.
No, it probably isn't. My guess would be that at some point China has to be revisited simply because you're talking about, you know, 1.5 billion Chinese who actually might give a damn about the NFL. And I think the NFL realized that, you know, that's an unbelievable potential market, in American football, mm-hmm. and they're starting to play more and more better caliber American style football in that region of the world. So I think it probably comes from Japan and, mm-hmm. and Korea mostly, but nevertheless, it's starting to trickle that direction. And everybody loves a show. Everybody loves to see the crazy Americans run around. It's an entertainment value
yeah.
as well.
Sure,
I mean, and frankly, you know, I know it's marketed to a small extent over there anyway. Bringing the games over there live, I mean, you can catch it, I think, some on the satellite. So I think bringing the games over there live, you know, you're talking about a potential frenzy for the NFL in terms of, you know, filling their pocketbooks. And mm-hmm. if things, you know, continue to stay sour here, economy-wise, you know, for the next year or two, which people are still forecasting that it will, mm-hmm. to me, this is a viable alternative. So it says then, if that this has been put on the back table to me, that there's something about the actual trip and the freedoms and the rules that might have to be followed and the restrictions that would be put on the league and or the teams involved that still haven't come up quite to the NFL snuff to make this trip happen.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah.
Because they're not gonna say no to the money. Trust me on that one.
Right. Hey, John.
There's something else going on. So,
can I bring up something a little off topic here for
sure.
a second?
Yeah.
Have you heard about this whole USC-UCLA jersey controversy?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I understand it. And Pete Carroll, for those that might not be aware, Pete Carroll wants to go back to old tradition when USC played UCLA and both teams wearing their colors.
Mm-hmm.
And so USC being the road team at the Rose Bowl, ironically, that's where UCLA's home games are played, they're going to wear their red, their cardinal, whatever color it is, red jerseys, while UCLA wears their home baby blues.
Mm-hmm.
And that's against NCAA rules. NCAA rules specifically state that visiting teams must wear white.
I mean, how ridiculous is this?
It's stupid. It is one of those, which is why, because Pete Carroll, and that's the story that's been in the media this week, Pete Carroll has said, we still want to wear red. And the NCAA said, well, we're going to fine you, and I put that word fine in quotation marks, I'm going to fine you a timeout.
I know.
At the start of the game, and so you'll be with less one timeout. And if you do it at the start of the second half, we're going to fine you another timeout. To that end, UCLA, who, by the way, has been on in this from the get-go, this is something that was originally discussed by Coach Carroll mm-hmm. and Carl Durrell, who is, of course, the former coach, now yep. Rick Neuheisel, who's the current coach.
Mm-hmm.
This has been in discussions between the two schools to go back to the old tradition that when both teams used to do this before the NCAA got in the way.
I mean, who are these killjoys that are running college football?
I don't know.
It's so aggravating between this and their insistence on not having a playoff system. I mean, it's infuriating.
Well, it's stupid, and this is where the NCAA has to have somebody in charge of oversight to say, you know what, we got to bend a rule here. But what they're also doing, and I can see, believe it or not, I can't believe I'm saying this, I can see the NCAA story here because they say, well, if we bend this rule for them and without some sort of repercussion, there are, who's to say that a team whose dark jerseys for some reason or another closely match the home team and both teams have the same color jerseys and it leads to confusion and it takes a perceived advantage away from a home team. I that's out there. I know it's out there. But I know, because I know some guys who worked at the NCAA in the past, I know that's how they think.
Oh, but I mean, you really think a coach who's playing, like, I don't know, let's say, Texas A&M and Oklahoma, let's say, they have very similar colored uniforms, right?
Well, A&M is dark, maroon.
But it's pretty close.
Oklahoma's bright red. I would say Texas Tech and Oklahoma would be more. I mean, Texas Tech is red. Oklahoma's red. Very similar reds.
Okay.
Or Alabama
fine.
And Oklahoma.
There's two reds right there. There's a good one. Alabama and Oklahoma. All right.
Yeah.
Do you really think either coach is going to risk having his players misidentify which players are the opposite? Of course not.
No.
It's USC and UCLA clearly have opposing colors. I mean, it's obvious to anyone who's not colorblind that those are two different color uniforms.
I think any team, honestly.
No other team is going to want to do that.
Any team should be able to wear whatever the heck color they want to wear. You know, the home team has the first right of refusal. If the home team wants to wear their dark jerseys, the home team will wear their dark jerseys. But you know how we handle it in the NFL? Home team has the option.
Except there was one exception. Do you remember the Patriots Thanksgiving game in 2002 when they went to Detroit?
Yeah.
They wore their 1985 throwback uniforms in red.
Yes.
And the Lions wore their throwback uniforms in blue.
Yeah.
So you had two teams wearing dark uniforms.
Right. You did.
Clearly opposite colors.
Well, I think.
And it worked out fine.
I think the NCAA needs to follow the NFL's rule.
Exactly. I mean, it's obvious. It's not like these two teams have nearly identical uniforms. If that were the case, I could see the NCAA's point. But they're clearly different.
Well,
why can't they just let? I mean,
I don't know.
They're doing it for tradition. The schools want to do it for
tradition, which speaks to the spirit of the game itself.
Exactly,
which is why we should be doing things. In fact, we should pay more attention to tradition because tradition is what makes the sport as great as it is.
This got me as upset as when Johnny Unitas died and Peyton Manning. This was before the Colts wore black shoes as a team.
Right.
mm-hmm. when they were wearing white shoes, and Peyton wanted to honor Colts great Johnny Unitas by wearing black shoes like Unitas used to do mm-hmm. that following Sunday.
And
the league wouldn't let him do it.
Right.
I mean, come on. There are some rules that you have. There are exceptions to every rule. And this UCLA-USC thing is, I think, one of those things where an exception has to be made. But
yep, it's pretty stupid.
I just wanted to bring that up because it's just so ridiculous.
It just shows one of the ridiculous, you know, things that goes on in sports nowadays. But just so you know, UCLA apparently is going to call a timeout as soon as they get
right.
the ball.
Right, yeah, Neuheisel said he was going to forfeit a timeout.
He's
going to,
forfeiting a timeout
right.
so it evens up the score on
yeah.
both sides.
Good for him.
Yeah.
I think that's the right move.
Yeah.
If the NFL, if the NCAA wants to play like that, fine.
Plus, what the hell does he have to lose? He's a 33-point underdog.
And like Pete Carroll said, it's the first half. How many timeouts am I going to use in the first half anyway?
Yeah, no kidding.
You know?
No kidding. It's true, especially when you're a 33-point favorite.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not really going to hurt anything. It's kind of dumb.
Well, we've got to head back upstairs and write, John.
Yeah, I know. You got to go write. So I appreciate your willingness to hang out with
no
us
problem.
And talk a little football today.
No problem. We'll be back tomorrow.
Yep, check you tomorrow. You got it. Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. Let's wrap up today's show by letting you listen into the conference call that Patriots media members had with Deion Branch, the former Patriot wide receiver, now with the Seattle Seahawks, this week's opponent for the Patriots, and find out how Deion is acclimating now that he's healthier on the field for the Seahawks. And then we'll be back same Pat's time, same Pat's channel with Russell Baxter from ESPN and Eric and the gang tomorrow right here inside the playbook.
Deion, this is going to be a little strange for you to play against the Patriots.
I think it's going to be a little bit of both. I think a little strange and a little excited, you know. Just the, man, it's crazy. I was looking at my playbook this morning and saw the New England Patriot helmet and also, you know, knowing where I'm at, that we're going against the guys that I played my first 4 years with, won two Super Bowls with, just shared a lot of memories with, but it's, you know, most of all, it's going to be a little strange, but a little excited just to be out there to play against all my friends and stuff.
Is it going to be strange, too, not seeing number 12 running that offense?
Yeah, that is probably the most strangest thing that you can think of. You know, me personally being there, we always counted on Tom to be there every week, and he was. And, you know, for him to be gone, and it's not a surprise that those guys are still moving forward and doing what they're doing with Matt Castle leading the team.
I know the ending of your career here probably wasn't ideal, but
right.
can you reflect back on your overall experience here?
I'm sorry.
When you think of your time with the Patriots, do you think
right.
of how it ended or the highlights? What?
No, I never think about how it ended. You know what I'm saying? You never know what the next day beholds for you in this business that we're in. You know, it was very understanding. It was very business-like. Both sides, you know, respect each other. I respect Coach Belichick. I respect everything he did. I'm pretty sure he respect me as well and what I did. I think each party had to do what was best for the Patriots. Had to do what was best for the organization. I had to do what was best for my family. And it's no love lost at all. It was just a business move. And, you know, it's understanding. You see a lot of things, a lot of up and down in this business.
Your Seattle career, injury-wise, hasn't gone probably the way you wanted it to. What's
right.
the experience been like out there?
It's been a little crazy. It's, you know, just to sum it up, it's been different for me. You know, my first 4 years was all good. Everything was good for me, except for the MCL injury I had. I came here. My first year here was good, even though it was kind of, I was thrown into the mix according to the trade situation. And, you know, last year I suffered three injuries. You know, it was kind of weird. There was weird injuries. I had a Liz Frank. I had a strained calf fascia. And then I tore my ACL in the playoffs. You know, then coming into this season, I had another fluke injury with my heel. So it's been a little strange, but I've been fighting through it. Staying positive. The team's been supporting me. All my teammates been supporting me and staying behind me. So other than that, I just feel like I don't take anything for granted. You know, I take the field each and every day to go out and play hard and try to help my team win. And you know, whatever happens on the field, you know, a slight injury here or there, that stuff is going to happen. It's football.
You were here for some of the best times in Patriots history. Is it surprising mm-hmm. for you to see now that they are 7-5 and struggling to make the playoffs despite all the injuries? But is it still somewhat surprising to see how much things have changed here?
Yeah, because I know those guys are working real hard, and I know Coach Belichick and his staff is doing everything they possibly can to put those guys in the best position to make the plays on the football field. You know, like you said, outside a couple injuries, there's been a couple bad things going on over there, as well as a lot of things going bad over here. You know, we've been hit with the injury bug the most, I think, out of every team in the entire league. But as a surprise, yeah, you know.
Have you been in touch with Tom at all to kind of see how his status is, how he's doing with that surgery of his?
Yes, ma'am. I talked to him. We've texted a whole lot. You know, even when he went down, I kind of felt bad because I was on the up end of my ACL recovery and knowing what he's about to go through, but it's nothing to him. He's a strong guy. He's going to prevail. He's going to be all right. You know, it's just an injury that you have to be mentally strong to overachieve this type of injury. You know, a lot of guys come back from it, but a lot of guys are not mentally back from the injury when they come back. And, you know, Tom, he'll be okay. But I talk to him a lot. I text him a lot. We chat back and forth. Not only Tom, I talk to a bunch of the guys on the team.
Who are some of the other guys, Dion?
Man, Ty Warren, Vince Wilfork, chit-chat with Rodney, Ben Watson, you know, Kevin Falk. Yeah, I mean, it's just a slew of guys. The biggest thing, there will be no love lost amongst me and the guys that was on the team. You know, we shed a lot of memories together. A lot of stuff didn't go the way we thought it would go, but we all understand that we're all grown men. You know, but for the most part, man, the nucleus guys that I speak to is not something new to everybody on the team. You know, we all still chit-chat with each other. I'll see those guys when they get here. We're supposed to catch up with each other and, you know, go out to eat or whatever.
Are you concerned at all about any, or not concerned, but what will it be like, you know, to see Coach Belichick and maybe some of the front office folks, assuming you might see him before the game, you know, given the way your tenure ended here? I mean, do you think that might be awkward?
No, I don't think it'll be awkward. I don't think it'll be awkward because, you know, like I said, I think we both sides understand what happened. And who knows, somewhere down the line, we may see each other again. You know, who knows? You know, I think, you know, I see those guys at the hotel when I go over to pick up the other guys. You know, I'm going to shake their hands, hug them. You know, we'll talk about a couple things here and there. You know, we'll move on.
So you have plans on a Saturday night with some of the old guys?
Well, I think they'll be here before that, right?
That's right.
It's Friday.
That's
right. Yeah. Yeah, I think they'll be here, what, Thursday, Friday?
Friday, yeah.
Yeah, one of those days. So I'll see those guys then. Once we get done practicing, I'll probably go to the hotel, sit in with them. Hopefully, Coach won't cut me off from going upstairs to the room. I don't think he will.
You sit in on some receiver meetings?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't do all that. I wouldn't do all that, but, you know.
Deion, when you've gone back and when you've been preparing for Patriots this week, is there a lot of stuff that looks familiar to when you were here?
Looking at the film and stuff?
Exactly.
No, I think those guys did a great job of not saying they was doing it because of me. It didn't have anything to do with me, but I see a couple things, but it's not the same. I can see certain things, but it's not the same. You know, offense nor defense. The defense is doing a whole something totally different from when I was there.
When you talk to them or text them, they sometimes talk about maybe they're a little frustration with the way the season has gone for them. Do they ever mm-hmm. kind of chat like that? Is there any particular conversations you recall of their overall mood? You know,
I think for the most part, yeah, when we chat, you know, the beginning of the conversation start off like, you know, for the most part, hey, y'all lost a tough one, this and that. But on both sides, we both say the same thing. Or y'all won a good game, and, you know, they'll tell me, you know, y'all lost a tough one or whatever. But other than that, I think we kind of moved past the football aspect after about the first two or three minutes.